Today on Movie Wallers, we talk about Mary Poppins Returns, Welcome to Marwen, and Glass. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Happy New Year.
Hello. Are we still allowed to say that?
We always talk about that.
Happy New Year.
I think the statute of limitations on Happy New Year is February.
Okay.
That's my
The role. Entire month of January is
Anytime
okay.
Anytime in January is so. Good to go.
I think so, yeah.
And it is a Happy New Year because...
Well, we have a new Movie Wallers dog.
We have a Movie Wallers dog.
Yes, I have a dog. I finally Yay. Gave in after years and
adorable.
Years.
She's adorable.
She is adorable.
We need to take an Instagram of her. With
Yazdi has a lovely picture of her. Okay. Already. Yes. So we'll post that to our page.
She can be our dog mascot.
Yay.
Yes.
Little Sawyer.
Little Sawyer, who's a beagle.
And she's adorable.
Yes. How big is she? She's like 20, not even like... 20 pounds?
She's probably, 15, 17 pounds.
We had a cat bigger than that, I think.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, our New Jersey cat.
So that's really cute. Congratulations, Yazdi.
Thank you. Lots of, as somebody said, lots of dog pooping.
Yes.
Dog poop picking in my future.
And welcome to the family.
Yes.
Welcome little to the Sawyer. Movie Wallace family, Little yes. Sawyer. Named after Tom Sawyer.
Tom Sawyer.
Lovely Mark name. Twain.
Yes.
So, it's been a bit of a hiatus for us, end of year. I know yesterday you were out of town. Rashmi and I got out of town as well over the holidays, mm-hmm. and we had that whole end of year crush of movies.
Yes.
So, one of the movies we're going to talk about today, I think we saw in December.
Correct.
So it's been a while, and hopefully...
this is still relevant.
Yeah, well, yeah, if nothing else, it's for the DVD release.
Correct.
and then we have, a lot of... Well, I guess award season is going to be upon us. We've already had the Globes, which I thought were disastrous, but that's for another podcast.
Yep. And apparently Oscar nominations are this coming week.
Yeah, by the time this podcast is out,
we may know.
We will know who the Oscar mm-hmm. noms are. And yeah, we will try and at least comment at some point in a future podcast, because they're always fun. I mean, despite mm-hmm. the controversy around the Oscars, there's something about them that... makes them always important.
Yeah.
And even though for the last couple of years, I felt very strongly about some of the winners and the nominations, and it still generates endless debate.
Well, it is the flagship of all the award shows.
And
this year, it's Oscars in particular, has been really riled with controversy. Although we say that every year.
We do. You know, but this has been a good year for movie.
Yeah, I would think so.
This has been a terrific year for movie. Sorry.
Yes. No, from the host, you know, the whole issue with Kevin Hart, maybe not, maybe yes, maybe no, maybe yes, maybe no. And now I think they've officially announced that there's going to be no host, or maybe I'm wrong.
And then I heard Kumail Nanjiani might have been considered or something, okay. But who knows?
And of course, the futzing around with categories that they eventually left alone, right? We were going to have the best commercial movie. No, what was it? The best popular movie.
Best popular movie, and then they gave up on it, and then they kind of, I'd heard that they were going to reinstate that, but thankfully they deferred. Because one of the movies I hope will really get a nomination is Black Panther.
Yazdi.
But that's been a very popular movie.
Why are you starting with the controversy already?
Sorry. And then there is controversy about Green Book, and then there is controversy about...
what's the controversy over Green Book?
Director Peter Farrelly, some clip came out where he was kind of saying that he loved to expose himself on the set or whatever. So there was that, and then the son of the guy who plays Mahershala Ali's character came out and said, my father would never have done that or something. I don't know. So there's lots of stuff. And so everybody loves Green Book.
I was going to say, look, can't we just judge the movie for the piece of art that it is?
Yeah.
But then there are some people who really hate it.
I understand the movie's
I don't
not...
really hate it as you stare at me, right. Yazdi.
No, I didn't stare at you. No. I've kind of... Yeah.
I just don't think it was as good as it should have been.
Right.
And that's something that's always the case, right?
Correct.
We all have our own viewpoint. But, award season is Always
we'll
fun.
Have to do a reaction show maybe.
Yes.
Or at least, yeah, intro one podcast with reactions. Anyhow, here we are today. First podcast of the year. So again, Happy New Year, listeners. Hopefully you had a nice holiday as well. And it's the year of the pig, I understand, from a Chinese mythology.
Yes, it
mythology,
is.
So
oink, oink.
Hopefully we will have not pig movies this year. The year of the pig is kind of a funny thing. I've got no idea about, you know, Chinese New Year and culture and all of that thing, but the year of oxes and pigs and snakes.
Monkeys
just
and rats. Rat, there's year of the rat, yeah.
It seems so unauspicious to me to be the year of the pig, but...
I'm going to find out more.
Yes.
All right, three movies to talk about. Let's get on with the show. So we have Mary Poppins Returns, Welcome to Marwen, and we also have Glass. So let's probably tackle them in that order. We'll start with Mary Poppins Returns. And this is the long-awaited, I guess, sequel to the... well, I guess it is a sequel to the Julie Andrews movie that we all grew up with, it felt like. I think
yes,
it was released... Was it in a 60s movie, a 50s movie? But it was very much a part of pretty much everyone's youth and has become, you know, a legendary movie. It's worn its way into popular culture and lore. So it's kind of interesting that they did choose to resurrect the franchise at this point. This movie, obviously...
54 years later. So it was released in 1964. Wow.
64. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So this movie does not star Julie Andrews, who I understand she is unable to sing anymore, which is kind of a cruel thing for somebody who had a voice as angelic as hers and as iconic as hers from Sound of Music and so on. But
she did some surgery to remove polyps and that went bad, right?
Yeah, it's very, very unfortunate for you know the Sound of Music singer. But this one stars Emily Blunt as the titular character Mary Poppins. We have a number of other people in here, Lin-Manuel Miranda, Ben Winslow, Emily Mortimer, Julie Walters, Colin Firth, Meryl Streep, Pixie Davies, I'll not talk about the cameos because they're wonderful little surprises.
Yeah.
So directed by Rob Marshall, who we know for many things, not least of which was Pirates of the Caribbean, but he also directed musical Into the Woods recently, a couple of years ago, which did very well, both critically and commercially, I think. He directed Chicago, so he's kind of an old hand at these musicals. So, guys, what did you think of Mary Poppins Returns?
So this is frothy, bright, saturated, and beautiful to look at, and even has some good songs in it. But why do we need this? And it's not the original. That said, I did have goosebumps at the beginning as the credits rolled because I love the original so much. And I actually wrote down in my notes, I'm super excited. I just keep thinking, why?
Yasti.
Yeah, I mean, I was wondering. I mean, it's such sacred Hollywood property. I mean, you know, entire generations have grown up watching this, you know, Mary Poppins, and it's universally beloved. I don't know of a single person who does not like it. It's very dangerous to do that, to kind of try and kind of, you know, take the next step. And there's good reason why for 50 years nobody touched it. So I'm surprised that they went the step ahead and did it. So there is that question, why? Just leave things be. But for whatever reason, if they have to do it, I really enjoyed it. I liked it. I kind of, like you, Rashmi, I was charmed by it. It kind of follows the original a little bit. We can talk more about it, a little bit too much to the T. But I don't know. It felt authentic to me. I cried at one point. It really got to me. I mean, there's this whole thing about parents and, you know, it deals with mourning very well, which is a strange thing to say about a film, about a movie about children, you know, for a children's movie, but it has its heart in the right place. It could have gone so wrong in so many ways.
What did you think, Joe?
Kind of like you guys, I like this one a lot. I think it very respectfully honored the material that came before it. In fact, it felt very old Hollywood from the very beginning. I mean, right from the moment the credits played, the score, the sensibility of the whole movie, the language that was used, everything worked for me, including the songs. In fact, I think if it hadn't been so many years since the original was made, this fit right in that universe of the original movie. So for me, it was perfect, other than the timing. You know, the timing just seems very odd. I think we've missed the moment. And again, I think as much as I would like to have seen, you know, Julie Andrews, reprise the role here, I think, you know, that moment left us, you know, 50 years ago. So I this worked tremendously well for me. And it just felt being back in that original place. Now, it has been a long time since I've seen Mary Poppins. I would say well over a decade since I've seen the original. So maybe it's just the memories that it was triggering, but it was fine. It was really good.
So Mary Poppins is one of those movies for me that whenever it's on TV, I'll always watch from wherever it is. And I think it would definitely be on my list of desert island discs, because it's so enjoyable, and it's one of those you can pick up and sing to, and effortlessly watchable. The problem I think I had with this one was, as much as I thought Emily Blunt was delightful and the costume was stunning and the attention to detail was incredible and it paid homage to the original, I overall found the character of her Mary Poppins just a little bit cold.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the nice thing always about Mary Poppins was that she never quite got involved with the children, but there was always that sort of level of care and attention that she's got underlying. Like, there's always that she never has attachment because she always has to leave. But I never saw heart in the Emily Blunt character. And that's what I really missed about the original. And it's interesting, Yazzie, because when you watch the original again, it is also dark. It's about children who are dealing with really absent parents, if you break it down. Yeah. And so, again, I like the theme of... you know, the fact that this is about also an absent parent in another way.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that it's if you have children or you've lost a loved one, this is actually quite a meaningful movie to share that with a child.
Yeah, the Mary Poppins character, I think everybody associates. We have a relative who is always perfect, and, you know, she always tells everybody what they should be doing, and we secretly all call, maybe it's not such a secret, we call her Mary Poppins, because, you know, she...
Does she know you call her Mary Poppins?
No, she doesn't.
I hope she's not listening.
But she's always telling everybody, you know, oh, you should be doing this, or you should never buy this from there, or you should be, you know, always, and she's always very prim, and everything is taken care of. But the Mary Poppins character, as beloved as she is, it's a very tricky character because, like you said, it's a character which we don't really know where she comes from.
Right.
We don't know where she goes away. And when she's there, she's playing this whole nod and wink thing because, like you said, she doesn't come out and explicitly give guidance. And she's kind of teaching the kids everything in a very subtle way, in a very, you know, almost... they don't realize that they have helped her. I mean, that she has helped them.
Correct.
That kind of way. So by definition, she needs to be stern. She needs to be a little standoffish. And I think that's why Julie Andrews is so venerated, is because she could be that person while still having a lot of heart. And I think the world of Emily Blunt, I won't fault her, but absolutely her character comes off cold. A character comes off a little... all-knowing, a little...
Diva-ish almost.
A little diva-ish, a little bit condescending even. But
yes.
I don't know how you could do it, or I can't think of another actor who could have done it. If they could have chosen to not be true to Mary Poppins' character and make her all sweet and cute and pink. But they don't. They wisely... The Emily Blunt Mary Poppins is very much like, in character, in sensibility, it's very much like Julia Andrews, I thought.
I found it to be quite a different Mary Poppins.
You did? Okay.
And apart from the fact that she's, you know, named in the title of the movie, this movie felt very much like it wasn't about her. And, you know, it could have been, what's the name of the family here now?
The Banks.
The Banks. It could have been the Banks family, you know, Christmas, or, you know, the Banks family, you know, time with the Banks family. because Mary Poppins is so almost ancillary to what's going on, whereas I felt she was very much at the heart of the Julie Andrews movie. So, but I think, I listened to something, and I can't remember if it was Emily Blunt saying or if it was somebody interpreting, but apparently she very deliberately tried to be different to the Julie Andrews Mary Poppins because she never wanted it to come across as a bad impression. She changed, right. You know, certain aspects of the character's mannerisms and her accent was also a very deliberate different. So she had this, you know, slightly different intonation to the Julie Andrews.
Yeah.
Which again, I couldn't at the time I was kind of fighting that instinct to say, is she a little bit off on that? As opposed to,
it was almost so like that.
Yeah, it was. It's quite different to Julie Andrews, but again, Emily Blunt, I think, made a conscious decision to step away from doing a Julie Andrews impression, and so you know maybe that's what we were sensing in terms of the lack of warmth.
And I don't know, maybe an Anne Hathaway. I don't know who else could have done this and done a better job because there's a lot of singing involved. She's
perfectly cast.
And she can sing and she is, I don't know. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but yeah, it's hard. I also want to talk about how the movie kind of almost, like you, I haven't seen the original Mary Poppins in a long time. And it looked kind of vaguely familiar to me, but then I went back on YouTube and I resaw some of the old Mary Poppins songs. And some of these songs are almost, you know, like identical to the old ones. Like, you know, there was a whole 2D animation bit and there's a very nice, glorious 2D animation in Mary Poppins Returns. You know, it was the chimney sweeps in the original one. This time there are lamp lighters. So they are not, they're really very careful of their property. They're not straying too much from the original one. So it has its pluses and minuses. I think if you have seen the original Mary Poppins more recently, it may kind of grate on you that they haven't used any cleverness, that they've just kind of said, okay, and how can we repeat this in a modern setting? How can we repeat that?
Yeah, and I think that's the problem I had with it, because if that's what you're going to do, and it's a very fine line to tread, of course it is, because you don't want to make it too different, and then you're like, oh my God, this is heresy.
Well, that's exactly right. If it was too different, it would have failed. It would be like, well, why make this Mary Poppins?
Why call this Mary Poppins? Exactly. So I think I still struggle with why. Why do it? I know it's a pre-sold franchise, blah, blah, blah.
It's the money.
It's the make of the money, yeah.
It's the make of the money.
But, and then I wanted to talk about the other character, Lin-Manuel Miranda. So a lot was made about this performance because he's the guy from Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And how great he was going to be. And I was like, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, you know.
I didn't understand the big deal about what he was bringing to the table.
Again, the character lacked the charm of the Dick Van Dyke chimney sweep, right. So
But he was clearly there in that role.
Oh, very, very much so. I mean, it just, again, I don't think he had as much to do as he might have.
I think it was just a big deal because, you know, again, Dick Van Dyke, big, huge Hollywood, you know, royalty, and especially in this movie. And to find a replacement for him who has not done a lot of movies, who is not, you know, a white dude, I think was a big deal that they kind of picked him. But I agree, he was, you know, he's very talented. He does a lot of singing. He raps, he writes beautifully. His new movie, In the Heights, is going to, you know, based on the play, is going to be coming out. But I think he was kind of constrained by the material. You know, he has to play the Dick Van Dyke role. So, you know, he can't have too many flourishes. So he comes off a little bit
underwritten.
Although a lot of people have complained about the songs. I really enjoyed the songs, and you know, there's the one Light Fantastic song. I really like that.
Yeah, I found myself really enjoying the musical numbers. And again, I think if it was the B side to the A side that was the original Mary Poppins, it fits right in. The only reason I'm not singing them today is because I haven't heard them 1,000 times like I have the original ones. But they were really wonderful. Again, they had that classic feeling. They were not at all, you know. There was no. They
hadn't missed a beat, is what you're trying to say.
Like
they could have been written back in time, was, in a sense.
The word I was looking for is anachronistic. They didn't feel at all like out of yeah. the same. There was the same universe.
Yeah, yeah. And like I didn't roll my eyes saying, "Oh, here comes another musical number," right? And it was very much part. It furthered the story. It yep. was part of the story. It was not grating. The songs didn't last forever.
For me, it was 50-50. Half of them, I thought, "Wow, these are great. I'm gonna hum these," and mm-hmm. then half of them, I was like, "Okay, yeah. next scene."
I feel like the movie can never attain the legendary status of the original one yeah. because times have changed.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't going to be the movie that we all sit down during the holidays to watch. And, you know, kids aren't going to be able to have that same experience as they had back in the day. So, again, I think if it had been released, you know, in, you know, 2 years after the original, it would have been, you know, the Mary Poppins sequel that we'd all wanted, you know.
Yeah.
I also really like Ben Whishaw, who plays yes, the father he's great. Of the two kids.
Yeah.
I think if the movie has any emotional ballast, any heaviness, it's because he just plays it note perfect. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, he's very sad about losing his wife. The kids are very sad about losing their mother. And he never makes it maudlin, but you really feel his pain. And there's a beautiful song, which I can't remember now, about people who have passed but who yeah. are still with you. And man, that song really got to me. And it's his earnestness. I mean, he's just very earnest. And Emily Mortimer, who plays his
delightful.
Wife,
she's delightful.
I want to spend 5 days in a little cottage with Emily Mortimer.
Okay, that's another type of podcast.
I'm sure
yes,
you do.
And British literature.
Yeah, and she's actually, if you realize what the young girl would have been, Jane Banks would have grown into. It's very, it seemed realistic that it would have been, she would have grown into Emily Mortimer for me.
Right.
Him, not so much, but I like the character he was playing. Yeah. Ready to wrap this one up?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Joe, you go first.
This movie worked for me on every level, and I think it was fraught with danger going into mm-hmm. it in terms of it being, you know, we were all ready to tear this movie a new one, right, when we walked in, because it's like, it's not the same, why do they do this? But in the end, it had me smiling, and I would like to see it again. I think the songs were strong. I think it's good family entertainment. So I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10. It was
wow.
really, really, just a really enjoyable moment at the movies.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah, I would have to give it an 8 out of 10 as well, because I think, again, what Joe said, I was going to give it a 7, but I'm thinking this is a landmine, right? It's like at every step, it's a landmine. Like, they could have effed this up every minute, I think. You know, it's such hallowed property before that to touch it and make something meaningful and make something that, you know, is not an embarrassment. Maybe it's several shades below it, but in no way is it an embarrassment. I had a warm, happy, authentically happy, not like a, you know, cloying saccharine kind of mm-hmm. warmth. It was like really genuinely, authentically happy feeling from start to finish. I think the movie wants to entertain. I think a whole new generation of kids who don't know about the first one will have a good time with it. You know, I struggle because people always ask me about movie recommendations, and we've talked about this before. I'll sometimes recommend a movie and they'll come back and say,
What the hell?
What were you smoking? There is somebody who, you know, carved somebody's throat out, or, you know, there's this big sex scene in there. And I'm like, oh God, yes, I'm sorry. I asked you to watch this with your kids because I forget. I don't keep all that, you know, in my head. So this movie, I think any family can watch it. There's something magical about it. I really did like it. 8 out of 10.
Okay, so now I feel like bah humbug.
No, that's fine.
As I think, as its own movie without the first one to compare it to, this is pretty enchanting. But knowing and loving the first one as much as I do, I needed more than a spoonful of sugar to digest this one. So for me, it's a 6 out of 10.
Wow.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moving on then, movie number 2 of this podcast is Welcome to Marwen. So Rashmi,
I am going to tell us about that. Yasdi, you're the only one of us that saw this, right?
Yes.
And this is based on a true story, I understand.
Correct.
So this is basically a chap called Mark Hoggenkamp, who's mm-hmm. played by Steve Carell, mm-hmm. Is attacked in a devastating manner, and it actually wipes away all his memories. And no one ever expected him to recover from them. So putting together pieces from his old and new life, Mark meticulously creates a wondrous little town where he can actually heal and be heroic. as he builds an astonishing art installation, a testament to the most powerful woman he knows. Through his fantasy world, he draws strength to triumph in the real one. So this is directed by Robert Zemeckis. It's written by Robert Zemeckis and Caroline Thompson. And it stars Steve Carell, Leslie Mann, Diane Kruger, Janelle Monáe, and there's a whole host of others. And it looked interesting because it has this interesting visual. But Yasser, you were the only one who saw this. So what did you think? I know it's been panned on the arty.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes.
Listen, Robert Zemeckis made Romancing the Stone. He made Back to the Future. He made Death Becomes Her. He made
Contact.
Contact, Forrest Gump, What Lies Beneath, The Polar Express, Castaway, Flight.
He's got a pretty impressive...
I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, in the last 30 years, I mean, some of the most famous, most successful popular films have come courtesy of Robert Zemeckis. And I think his heart is in the right place, but... You know, every once in a while, a good filmmaker just completely misjudges a movie, and this is what happens here. I happen to see so there was a documentary, it actually won Best Documentary in 2010, mm-hmm. and it's called Marvin Call, and it's based on this real man who, essentially came back from war, and he had very severe PTSD, and then he also had, and the movie doesn't shy from this to its great credit, but he also liked to wear women's clothes. So he was actually, because he was wearing heels or something, I forget, he was beaten up by these people outside a bar. And that made him lose his memory. And he was like completely out of it. And he then just decided that he's going to build this shot by shot, 1/6 perfect to scale world in his backyard, which was this Italian town where he was during the war. And he kind of used... all the women that he had met during the time of the war or those around him who were helping him, he put them as characters in there and kind of helped him get past it. And it's really a very, very... the documentary is amazing because it tells you about how when nothing else works, like the doctors, everybody had given up on him, it was ultimately some form of art which saved him, you know, some form of expression which kind of helped him deal with it. And this movie kind of has good intentions, but... Robert Zemeckis, because you know he's technically very good. Remember, he made
Death Becomes Her. Yeah, that was an amazing movie.
You know,
Polar Express.
You know, he did that whole 3D imaging Bevolve, the one with Angelina Jolie. He did that, so he really is able to do things at the edge of animation and real world. And he decided that a big part of the movie would be inside the head of this character, where he imagines these people he meets in real world as characters in the world that he's built. And these characters like Leslie Mann and Janelle Monáe. Janelle Monáe, thank you. They appear like dolls in his life, and he himself appears like a doll because he puts dolls in there. So it's this very weird thing about these plastic moving Lego kind of things which have human faces on them, and they talk and they move jerkily, and that just doesn't work. I think that's the problem people have, and there's large parts of the movie are like that. And you know, it's all very complicated. This character is complicated, but you know, he really depended on the women around him, so parts of it get very creepy. In terms of, you know, when is obsession an obsession and when does it become too much? Because he would meet somebody at the post office who was really kind to him, and then he would make a doll of her, and then he would imagine her being somebody who saves him during the war. I mean, on the face of it, it sounds pretty harmless, but...
It doesn't sound harmless.
But,
to me.
You know, it is an intrusion. Yeah. So I think had Zemeckis not tried to kind of redo the whole movie or big portions of the movie... reanimated using the technology at his hand, it would have been a lot better. And there's just missteps at every step of the way. I just got tired of watching these plastic figures run around, and they don't look very plasticky. They're meant to be between worlds, right? Because it's what he's imagining.
It's what he's imagining, yeah.
But it just sounds creepy. I mean, it looks creepy.
Is it a good story though? I mean. So it sounds to me like you're recommending everyone watch the documentary versus this one.
Yeah, I do. I do. It's just, it gets tiresome and it's earnest, but it just gets tiresome. And the whole finale is based on this fictional, you know, attack on this little town. And this attack never happened. It's something he's imagined. And there are these women who are like superheroes who come down. And it's just, I don't know. You watch the documentary for okay. sure. I mean, it's... and, you know, he also kind of... I've never seen him indulge in this, but he kind of cross-references his own movies. There is like a whole part where the car from the... Back to the Future movie shows up. I'm sure it didn't show up in that person's life. And then there's another little gimmick where... somebody's head turns twice, like if you've seen Death Becomes Her, where Meryl Streep's
face. Oh, yeah.
So it kind of felt like a cheap shot. Maybe he thought he was being clever that we are, you know, we recognize it's from his previous movies, but it just, I don't know, it didn't
work.
Well. Yeah. So it just is a lost opportunity, and he spent so much money on this, and I feel bad for poor Steve Carell because he spends large parts of this movie talking to dolls, and it's just, he can do so much better. He was so much better in Boy,
everything.
Beautiful Boy that we saw recently. Yeah. So, gosh, a 3 out of 10.
Oh, gosh. 4 out of 10. That's probably the lowest you've ever
given. 4 out of 10. It's not a pleasant watch.
Sounds insufferable.
It got insufferable. I mean, and by the way, I should say that the first walkout started 20 minutes into the movie.
Oh, really?
The second one was at 40 minutes, and then there were steady walkouts all the way through the movie. I think it just jars people to watch this stuff.
Wow.
So, I don't know. Yeah.
Okay.
He has 2 other movies, though, that he's working on right now. He'll do well.
Moving
Steve
along?
Carell or?
No, Robert Zemeckis. Okay. Yeah.
Moving along then, another director with a very long CV of hit or miss movies. So let's talk about the movie Glass by M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes, so M. Night Shyamalan famously at one time was on the cover of Time magazine, which dared to ask the question, is he the next Spielberg? Well, history has told us he's not, but, you know, he continues to make movies. But
he doesn't let that stop him.
It doesn't. And I will stand behind his early output with pride, and I will fight anyone who argues that Signs is a bad movie.
Signs is terrific.
Or that, you know, The Sixth Sense is a bad movie. Like he did initially, or even Unbreakable. His first 2 or 3 or 4 movies were really excellent. And then things have happened. I think his most, after he had this kind of drop in quality, I think his most famous movie, because he did a movie called The Visit, remember that?
Which was excellent.
Superb. Which was kind of fun. Yeah, it was fun.
I really liked it.
About the crazy grandparents.
Yes.
The creepy grandparents.
Yes. Yeah.
And then a couple of years ago, he made a movie called Split, which was about this serial murderer or serial...
A multiple personality.
But he abducts women, and he keeps them in his cellar, and he has split personalities. And I think in the movie we saw 7 of them, but he's supposed to have 14 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Shyamalan, unfortunately, through his own making, is burdened with making every single one of his movie have some twist in the ending. So Shyamalan played out this whole movie, Split, where this one girl tries to get away from this crazy-ass psycho multiple personality murderer. And then just to make a twist in it, somehow in the very last scene of the movie, statute of limitations is passed, that movie's old now, the Bruce Willis character from Unbreakable shows up, and we realize that there's some connection between this movie and Unbreakable.
Right.
Well, here you are. That is that movie. It is Glass. And Glass essentially brings the two main characters from Unbreakable with the main character from Split and kind of puts them in the same environment. James McAvoy returns in the same character as before, you know, where he plays 14 or 15 different personalities. I think in this movie he plays a few more. And he has indeed abducted some women. And he has them hostage. And then Bruce Willis's character, who from Unbreakable, if you remember, was this everyday security man who starts to realize that he has superpowers. And he has kind of now gotten to a stage where he kind of wears a hood and he very quietly goes and helps people and kind of uses his superpowers for good. And then Glass was the character, again, from Unbreakable, played by...
Samuel L. Jackson,
who suffers from this condition called osteobifida, where he has essentially very, very, very...
Fragile bones.
Fragile, brittle bones, and the slightest thing can break his bones. But But he was the representation of evil in that movie that, that Bruce Willis was counting. Well, in this movie, all three of those characters are brought together in a medical institution, in ahead of a doctor who's trying to convince them that they actually don't have any superpowers. And I will leave it at that. It is written and directed, of course, by Shyamalan. And the movie stars, you know, like I said, all of those characters from the previous movies. Bruce Willis is here, as is James McAvoy, Samuel L. Jackson, Anya Taylor-Joy, who was the girl who escaped in Split. She's here. Sarah Paulson has a really big role as the doctor in this particular mental institution. Spencer Treat Clark, who played Bruce Willis's son in the original movie. Now he's grown up and he plays Bruce Willis's son again in this movie. And M. Night Shyamalan himself shows up as a security guard, whatever you want to make of that. And then there's a few other people, again, written and directed by Shyamalan. That was a very long introduction, but what did you guys think of Glass?
So I didn't know that Unbreakable and Split were part of this Eastrail 177 trilogy. I was kind of surprised when I found out that, that it was a trilogy. And other than that one scene in Split, that was the only link, in a sense, between the first two movies, right?
The twist is that it was a sequel.
Right, but then we find out it's actually a trilogy. So other than that, I didn't really know that, and I think that's irrelevant. And it doesn't feel like there's much of a link between the Split character and... it feels all very set up. But that being said, I really enjoyed this movie. I really, really, really enjoyed it. I think generally it's well put together, other than one part, which I'll talk about later. But I thought it was enjoyable. It was like twisty, turny. It was suspenseful. It had all the horror tropes. And look, it rests on James McAvoy's 14 shoulders. He is the star of this movie, and without him, I think it would have been an epic fail. But that being said, I think it's got lots of things wrong with it, but overall, I really enjoyed it, and I definitely don't think it deserves the panning it's getting on Rotten Tomatoes.
Jaw?
Yeah, well, your jaw was, literally did say, hit the
floor.
Yes, his
table is actually made of glass, and yeah. I think my jaw almost broke it just now when I said, do you like this movie? So here's what I'll say. I mean, I use the word insufferable a lot when I talk about movies that I can't stand. This one was sufferable, and by that I mean... It's a real mess of a thing, right? It's so crammed full of these nonsense twists that it felt to me like the movie could have been, you know, 15 minutes long, but for this left and right and upside down twists and turns it's trying to play with it constantly. But ultimately, I think it failed for me because it never seemed to deliver on its promise of, you know, bringing these three characters together for a finale. And what was most frustrating to me was the movie kept teasing this big finale, you know, in a location that was set up from the right from the very beginning of the movie. There's like a little newsreel about this new building being built, and it just felt
Osaka Tower. Or whatever.
Yeah, and I was like,
in Philadelphia.
So I was waiting for this finale to come, and instead the movie has its finale in the front yard of something else. So again, this movie. You know, the comment I gave to the press agent for the movie when I came out was, it was just a horrible mess of things. It doesn't, and it didn't come together, and it didn't deliver on any of its promise. So a very frustrating movie to watch for me, and, you know, sufferable is as nice a word as I'll say about it.
Yes,
Steve. I told the press release person that it was nonsense. The whole movie was nonsense. It just really irked me. And I really appreciate... I liked Split a lot.
Yes.
And I still think James McAvoy is fabulous in this, and he deserves, I hope, some kind of awards recognition at the end of 2019, although this movie has been so heavily panned. Maybe he won't. But this is my big concern about this movie. So he's bringing together these three characters who supposedly... It's almost like an origin story for X-Men, right? These are all people who have some superpowers, and they are in a very real world, and they have a real hard time dealing with that superpower. Even if, you know, in the James McAvoy's character's case, it's he's using it for very, very bad purposes. But he brings these three characters together, and then he doesn't really know what to do with them, and he kind of invents this whole Sarah Paulson's doctor character, who for large periods... who for large periods of the movie is trying to convince the three of them that they are not superpowers, that they don't have superpowers, and that they're delusional. And I didn't get that. Mm-hmm. Why was she doing it? And then there was some... I mean, I can ramble about this movie for a long time, but I think...
And don't give anything away.
No, I won't give anything away, but I think this movie expects you to have seen Unbreakable like 2 days ago. Okay, not 12 years ago, but 2 days ago. I watched that movie. I enjoyed it. I love that movie, but I don't remember what a clover means, and I don't remember these other whatever, you know.
Brushing past somebody.
Too, right. Yeah. So I'm like, come on.
And we only do because we read the wiki page literally as we were waiting for the movie to start.
I said that to Rashmi, just we better read the background to Unbreakable, because it was a 2002 movie, I think, like 17 years ago or something like that, that it was made. So a lot of the subtle references were vanished from my brain, but...
Yeah, and the other thing which really bothered me is there's a lot of commentary in the movie. The movie tries to be very meta, and some might say it is very meta because it's talking about, at some point somebody says this is just an origin story. At some point there's a lot of discussion about comic books and villains and how heroes are supposed to behave and how superheroes are, and there's all this stuff. It doesn't come together. It just feels like he's trying to sound more clever than he is. Yeah. I mean... Something like A Cabin in the Woods, okay? It's also deconstructing the whole horror thing, and it does it with so much cleverness. I thought that movie was so much clever. He's trying to deconstruct the superhero, you know, genre here, and it just, I don't know, it didn't work for me. I was just, irritated by it.
Yeah, and I found the same things irritating, Yassi. Like, the Sarah Paulson story, the explanation of it comes so little, so late.
Right.
That it doesn't make sense. And I do wish that the very last 5 minutes hadn't happened. I was so pissed off. It should have stopped, literally 5 minutes before. Mm. That would have been a much better ending. But I did like this whole exploration of... what did I call it? You know... The power of suggestion and what the mind can do versus what is really a superhero. So I did like that it spent quite a bit of time sort of saying, well, the power of the mind is so amazing that you can say something and then you can do it. I kind of like that. And I like the exploration of people who do have multiple personalities, why they have them, because it's really... out of fear and protection of the young child who was maybe abused or had such bad post-traumatic stress disorder that these other personalities appear to protect that hurt little child. And so I like that exploration of when someone who really understands the pain and the suffering comes into contact with someone who's suffered that pain as well. It can be a bridge. So there were some really nice ideas in here. And for the most part, for me, it was an enjoyable ride. I found exactly the same things irritating as you did, Yazdi. And I think that's where it's failed as a movie overall. But the ride was still really enjoyable for me. And again, I have to put that down to James McAvoy. I mean, had he not been so loud and proud and big, it would have been an epic failure for me.
And the reason it was for me is because it was too many things thrown into the mix in terms of the storytelling. And I think, Yasti, you nailed it, right? With your comment about the whole Sarah Paulson contrivance to bring these characters together and then flipping it on its head at the last minute of the movie. Like, why would that have ever played out in... It had no integrity.
What was the purpose?
It had no integrity.
It just felt...
When you understand what the original what the ultimate objective was, then the first hour and a half of the movie is irrelevant. And so... So I think that's ultimately why I felt the thing was, trying to be far too clever by half. And ultimately failed, and it tripped over its own gobbledygook constantly.
Yeah,
and I feel, you know, again, there's a piece of me which can see the ultimate goal of what he was trying to achieve, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, if you bring in a team of writers, right, the people that know how to craft the narrative that you're trying to give us here, don't, you know, I think Shyamalan. His own arrogance, I think, is his downfall.
I think it's pure vision. He wants to put his pure vision, like Tarantino does, on the screen, right?
Sure, but I mean, I think, you know, he's running out, well, he ran out of tricks years ago, and so he's rehashing one of the things, and I don't know.
It's ambitious, and it has a very, it has a sure-footedness about it, okay? So it, it's at least
confident.
I thought, yeah, it's
very confident.
Confident
and competently
so
made.
At least the first half, or except for the strange third act, yeah, it feels like it has confidence of purpose, but... you know, when you have these three excellent characters, you know, which have so much to say about so many things, to spend an hour in a 2.5 hour movie on this fourth character, the Sarah Paulson character, talk about trying to convince them that they, that maybe they don't have superpowers. It's just, I don't know, it's, it felt strange. And then there were too many people going into comic books and opening random pages of comic books, and the screens, you know, pans on some piece of dialogue, and it's suddenly supposed to be something profound. I didn't understand that. Maybe I'm not enough of a geek, but...
Well, you're enough of a geek, just...
yeah, I'm a geek, but I'm not a comic book geek. But it's, you know, I mean, he has so much talent for summoning dread out of thin air. Mm-hmm. He's done it so well in his first few movies. Even movies such as The Happening or The Visit, which were like... howlingly bad. I mean, he really scared you, I think.
I was
very good.
I was scared in some bits of this.
Were you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were some bits, especially that foreboding, you know, you're in like a mental hospital, psychological, you know, patients.
He's clearly talented at
creating. He's really good at like the thing with the lights that changes James McAvoy's
personalities.
Is it going to work? Is it not going to work? I thought that part was done very. I mean, I can sum this up. I see this one as glass half full. For me, this is a 7 out of 10. I actually really enjoyed
the
movie.
Out of 10.
No, but I'm saying it's even fuller.
Okay. Okay.
7 out of 10. I really enjoyed this movie. Despite its flaws.
Yeah, it has many, many flaws, and I think he should. I know he wants to be very grand and ambitious, and I honestly question whether he intended all along for these universes to merge, but maybe he was stuck at the ending of Split and now he's stuck seeing them through. I give him credit for being, I mean, the movie does a lot of interesting things. There's a lot of pans from the bottom. You see people coming, walking to a car, and you only see it from their side view mirror. So he tries things,
the overhead,
you know,
shots,
the visually
the
stuff.
Yes,
and I actually was tickled by the fact that he promises this climax at a location, and then he kind of says, I'm not going to give it to you. Even that, I'm willing to get it. But it just didn't add up for me. The Anya Taylor
Johnson
character, she went through the entire duration of Split trying to get away from this crazy man. And in this movie, she spends the entirety of her time trying to help him. I don't understand. Why would she want to help him? She just got away from him after he did horrible things to her. Maybe some kind of Stockholm syndrome. I don't know. Maybe she's a star now, so they want her. Anyway, a very generous 4 out of 10.
Oh, glass half empty. Joe.
Like, just nonsense. It was nonsense. I'm sorry.
Yeah. This was a lot of ideas vomited onto into a script and then made. So I think, again, in the moment, I didn't hate the movie. I was just confused as to what its aim was. Like, okay, where are we going with this? Oh, we just took a left turn, so now you've wasted my time. So, you know, I just had that constant kind of, like, irritation of, you know, sure, I didn't know where it was going, but that's because the journey made no sense, right? Mm. It needs to have a certain level of integrity to say, oh, I didn't see that coming because, you know, there was a sleight of hand. Instead, it was, I didn't see that coming because... there's now new information available that we didn't have before. So you tortured me for no good reason.
Yeah.
For me, that gives it a 5 out of 10. And, you know, considering that this is the culmination of, you know, three stories and ultimately meant to be a finale, I felt like it really fizzled out because Unbreakable was you know, disappointing only in the context of it wasn't The Sixth Sense, which was a stunning movie. You know, Split, I think we all enjoyed that to some extent. I think the two of you liked it way more than I did.
Yeah, I really liked it.
But, you know, okay, it had its moments. And here we have something that's just, you know, scrambled ingredients and nothing cooked, so too bad.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thus endeth the first podcast of the year. Where we pooped on
three movies.
We pretty much did, didn't we? We're going to be grumpy this year, I hope.
But, you know,
we do say this every January, right? You know, right. This is the time of year where not necessarily the best material comes out. So,
We've been on such a climax of all the good stuff that just came out. So,
right.
Yeah.
Which you can still catch in all the theatres at the moment.
Yeah.
All the stuff indeed. We spoke about in the last three podcasts is still playing.
And you know, but maybe we should end it here. I did want to talk about Bird Box at some point
because
we can touch on. So when we do our Netflix picks. All right, until our next podcast then. Too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.